It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.
It's Open Call. It's Monday, April 15th, 2009. I'm Chris Grace.
And I'm Eric Michaud.
Time to file your taxes.
Oh, God, it's today.
Or, in my case, an extension. Because I don't feel like doing it.
Yeah, well.
I have to figure out with California what you do for that.
Hopefully before the close of business today.
Which it's by midnight.
2 hours. Okay.
Texas is always midnight. Because they always used to have news stories about people like at the post office all the way up to midnight.
Right.
But the extensions you can do online. Mm-hmm. I've done it before.
Yeah, that was always a question I had. It was like, where are these 24-hour post offices?
On tax day, I believe they're open late.
Really?
Yeah. But there's always at least one. Though? Yeah, there's always at least one that's open till midnight.
Because as long as it's postmarked by midnight.
Yeah. Huh. And get the postmark.
All right. Well, there you go.
So we are back.
We are back. It's been a little bit of a hiatus.
We're back in the country.
And both in the same room.
Yeah.
How exciting.
And we have lots to talk about.
Do we?
Yeah, we do. Well, let's get some Broadway news out of the way first.
Okay. Well, a lot of things in previews, a lot of things closed, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So Be More Chill and Kiss Me Kate and Ain't Too Proud are now open. Reviewed and open. Kiss Me Kate has extended already its limited engagement with Roundabout. Anastasia has closed. The band's visit has closed.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things have gone. Waitress is now starring Shoshana Bean, who it's interesting because she hasn't been on Broadway since Wicked. She was the second Elphaba. She replaced Idina Menzel and was original cast of Hairspray and has not been on Broadway since then. So like 2004-5-ish.
So almost like 15 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah. So she's back and starring as Jenna, and Joey McIntyre just left the show. So now Jeremy Jordan is in the show with her. And
Jeremy Jordan, is that the one
from Newsies?
Oh, boy.
Faves.
However, she sang She Used to Be Mine on what was it on the Today Show or something?
I don't
know
whether that was on. I just saw the clip. I think it was like the Today Show or Good Morning America or one of those.
It's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good.
It is very good. I will say a lot of her facial expressions and a lot of what she does with her hands especially still seems very witchy to me.
Uh-huh.
I think she hasn't quite shed the Elphaba because she does a lot of like kind of arched back, high eyebrows.
Well, she hasn't done it since Wicked since 2005.
Yeah, maybe it just lives with you.
Yeah, I don't think it. Then I doubt. Well,
that's just her.
Had you seen her before?
I saw her in Hairspray, but she was just ensemble.
I wonder if that's just natural then.
Yeah, maybe.
I doubt that she has Wicked habits that she hasn't shed in 15 years.
Of course, I was just teasing or joking. Interesting thing that I saw and was really kind of cool, I thought was great. Danielle Brooks from Orange is the New Black, she plays Tasty.
Mm-hmm.
She was also Sophia in the revival of Color Purple on Broadway. Will be leading the cast of Much Ado About Nothing in the park this summer, Shakespeare in the Park, as Beatrice.
Oh, cool.
So I'm like, that's great. Like, colorblind and body positive casting. I love it. It's great. And I think she's going to be hilarious. I think she's so fun.
Color conscious, we say these days.
Oh, pardon me. I apologize.
Who's playing the Benedict?
I have not seen that yet, but she's the first announced.
Cool.
So very cool about that. Lots of things in previews. Tootsie is in previews. Beetlejuice, Hillary and Clinton with Laurie Metcalf. Also, speaking of Laurie Metcalf, it's now been announced.
I know. I thought she's doing Virginia Woolf.
Next season.
Oh, man. They announced that early.
Yeah. Opposite Eddie Izzard.
Yeah.
So
that'd be interesting.
I think I when I posted this on Facebook for anybody who's friends with me on Facebook, it's like Virginia Woolf is becoming the Gypsy of plays. Like,
yeah.
They're going to revive it like every 6 years just because they know they can.
And it's pretty inexpensive. It's four actors.
Four people, yeah.
It's a house, you know.
And it's a kind of bee in your bonnet, kind of feather in your cap kind of hat. Like, oh, you did Virginia Woolf.
Right.
It's, you know, it's one of those actors
yeah.
kind of plays.
I mean, I'm always skeptical because the movie is very good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Have you seen the filmed version from the Royal National last year with Imelda Staunton?
No.
Oh.
Well, I'd watch that.
Yeah, I'm sure she's incredible.
I'm sure Laurie Metcalf will be good. Maybe Eddie Izzard will be good. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know enough of his non-Eddie Izzard work to know.
Yeah.
What else? Hadestown is in previews. Oklahoma is in previews. I think Oklahoma has officially opened now. Gary, the sequel to Titus Andronicus that was to star Nathan Lane and Andrea Martin, is in previews after delaying for a while because of the removal of Andrea Martin. She broke a couple ribs, I think.
Yeesh.
Yeah. And the revival of Burn This with Adam Driver and Kerry Russell. is in previews.
That's,
and
people have said that's very good.
I've heard that's great. Yeah. And King Lear with Glenda Jackson, which I've heard is remarkable, is also in previews. So lots to see, lots of new stuff. What the Constitution means to me has just extended again. So that's interesting and, you know, kind of timely.
I saw some people mention that that might be a shortlist for the Pulitzer, but they did not. It did not win the Pulitzer.
Right. You said today. It just won. It just was announced today, right?
Yeah. Fairview, played by Jackie Sibley's Drury, played the New York Soho rep last year. It sounds really interesting. I actually want to go to get the script, but at least on Amazon, the script is not being released until September. So I wonder if Samuel French, although the Samuel French store in Los Angeles is closing.
Right.
So unless maybe Lin-Manuel will buy it.
He's buying all the other ones, right?
Yeah. And then did you talk about closings already?
I did.
Kinky Boots and...
Oh, well, I mentioned the Band's Fizz. I hadn't mentioned Kinky Boots yet.
Right.
But yeah, Kinky Boots also closed. Speaking of closings, a show that we both saw in Edinburgh a couple years ago, Nassim is ending its run off Broadway in New York. It's got one more week.
Okay.
So get out there and see it.
If you're in New York, we've been talking about this for 6 months. You need to go see that.
Get off your butts and go see it.
Yeah.
Interesting across the pond, as they say, type of casting. Bianca Del Rio, the drag queen, is joining the cast of Everybody's Talking About Jamie.
That's not the one that was in Rent.
No, that's Valentina.
Okay.
No, Bianca Del Rio is the real kind of sassy, nasally clown. She considers herself a clown more than
drag, yes.
per se. She's going in as Loco Chanel / Hugo. She joins the cast on May 6th and will be in the show till June 29th. So it's a little 6-week run, but something fun to boost the sales over there. What else? This one is just a little personal thing. Speaking of the UK, the UK professional debut of the musical Amour will be playing May 2nd at the London venue, which is the Charing Cross Theater. They open officially May 8th, and it's one of those shows that did not run very long on Broadway. It was only 21 performances, one of which I saw. So it's getting a little 2-month run. It runs through July 20th in London. So if you get the chance and you're over there, check it out, because it's a very, very sweet little musical with a Michel Legrand score.
Oh, cool.
And that's about it for news. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about the first episode of Fosse Verdon. And we're going to talk about that we just saw a show.
Well, yeah, we could wait on Fosse Verdon. You want to wait a week maybe to talk about it?
We could.
So we can.
We'll just talk about Charlie this week and then Fosse next week. We can talk about two episodes next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we're going to make you wait.
And also, I have queued up at some point to listen to, there's an old Gwen Verdon interview on NPR.
Oh.
On my phone. Neat. To listen to. Because you were saying that her voice is very accurate.
She's got the like the kind of quiver and the little bit of the raspiness down. It's not so much an impersonation that Michelle's doing. It's more of like a just a loving... It's a character. It's not an impersonation, which I really enjoy.
So we saw a show this week.
Yeah. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory on the national tour.
One of my favorite podcasts, I will not say who they are. They're on the way. I went to an appointment today, and on the way home driving, I was listening to a different podcast, not a theater podcast, just a comedy podcast. And they had seen it and they all liked it.
Really?
And I was like, okay. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the music is by, well, it's got some original songs.
Well, it's got the original songs from the film with the Leslie Bricus, Anthony Newley score. Right.
And then it's got Mark Shaiman.
Right.
And then it's got a book by David Gregg, not a person I really know of. And overall, I did not enjoy it.
You said it was
the worst. I thought the first act particularly is one of the worst things I've ever seen my whole life.
Act two does improve simply because you're finally at the Chocolate Factory.
Yes.
But it seems like we get to the Chocolate Factory and immediately it's like the kids are picked off one by one. It happens so fast.
Right. And the first act is so slow.
Right. It's like we can get to the Chocolate Factory earlier in act one and give that time to breathe a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I understand like wanting to build the anticipation and wanting to build the excitement of finally getting to the Chocolate Factory, but we don't know or care about these characters at all.
Yeah.
Yes, we're supposed to dislike the other four kids, but they were repulsive in this version to a point that, I mean, we watched a child spoiler alert, you know, get murdered in a really kind of graphic way.
Oh, I was fine with that.
Right. But the audience is laughing. I'm like, it's fine that we don't care about them as far as like, we don't like them, but like, we don't know them at all. So like, we don't necessarily like or dislike them enough for that to be okay for me.
Oh, I think that was just meant as like gruesome fun.
Yeah.
Which I think that I'm fine with. Like those are the most interesting parts of the show to me. Out of all the things we've seen in Los Angeles, this is my probably least recommendable thing that we've seen because I don't think it's really interesting. It's nowhere near as good as a movie. It's the music. The music's fine as long as it's the original songs. Most of the new music is not compelling.
You didn't love that Queen of Pop song?
No. And the pace of the book is just so boring. This is a spoiler, I guess, but they don't make it to the chocolate factory until the end of Act One. The very last moment of Act One is when they get to the doors of the chocolate factory.
Right.
So leading up to that, it's basically backstory of all the kids. Right. I mean, you know the kids more than you do in the movie. Like way more.
You
like,
think?
Yeah, because you get an entire song for each one about their backstory.
Hmm.
But it doesn't some of the songs are bad.
Yeah.
Like really bad.
Yeah.
I
feel like in the movie you get the little like newscast, you get the little pop-up newscast of, like introducing each kid and kind of setting up like he's really into TV, she's really into gum.
Yeah. Well, they do that here.
Right, sure. They do, but I don't know. Maybe the diction was not good throughout. Mm-hmm. So like I couldn't understand a lot of their lyrics. So it was like, well, I'm checking out because I don't care about you.
Yeah, I don't think that you would have appreciated it even if you did. I think the lyrics are bad. Like, this has all time one of the worst lyrics I've ever heard.
Which was,
if cabbages were watches, we'd know the time of day. Which is completely nonsensical. My jaw dropped in terms of like, what is that supposed to mean?
Well, they have cabbage for soup.
Right, but like...
But they don't have a lot of them.
But if first of all, you only need one cabbage if it's going to turn into a watch. Second of all, like, if you're saying if cabbages were watches, because, like, we have a lot of cabbages in the house, why is watches the metaphor you choose to... Are watches a thing people have a lot of, or...
No, you know? But also, they don't have a lot of cabbages. That's part of the point, is that they're starving.
So right.
It's like, where are you... What is the metaphor?
And also, like, you know, it's not hard to know what time it is. You just ask someone what time it is. So that's not really a thing. Like, it's not like... It's not, I want to look up what the front half of that lyric is, but I think it's something to the effect of like, we've got a lot of things that poor people have. If these were nice things, then we would have a different life.
Right.
But like, I don't associate watches with being like a luxury item.
Right.
But that's like, you know, emblematic of like a lot of the, which song was that in, by the way? Was that in the If Your Dad Was Here song or?
I think so. It was one of the home scenes in Charlie's shack.
So the first half of the show, I think there's also a big kind of mistake, which is that they incorporate Willy Wonka into a lot of the show before he really shows up as Willy Wonka.
Right, which really kind of undercuts the excitement of seeing him.
Yeah. And I was telling that to someone and they were like, well, it's probably because Christian Borle, who played the part originally on Broadway, or it's probably Douglas Hodge who did it in London. Mm-hmm. If you're getting like a star to be Willy, he might not want to sit out the first act. Although I totally would. I think that'd be great.
Or you're paying for a big star. You want to use him as much as possible.
Yeah. I think that it really hurts the buildup of to who Willy Wonka is. For example, when early in the show, Charlie has a bunch of, he doesn't know information or misinformation about what happened to Charlie and mm-hmm. is he old or is he whatever. It doesn't, if Willy Wonka's standing right there and you're like, he's 90 years old and he's 10 feet tall. And you're just like, no, he's standing right there. There's no mystique to it.
Right.
But yeah, I just found it so dull.
I found it so dull. And I found a lot of the changes pointless.
Yeah.
Like the addition of having Willy in the candy store for all of Act One never paid off. It never went anywhere.
Yeah.
The only thing that paid off about it is they developed a relationship before getting into the factory.
But they didn't.
But not really, because he was always kind of a dick to him.
Because as the candy man, he was like a dick to him regularly.
Uh-huh.
like there are all these moments where you think he's going to be generous to him,
right?
And he wasn't.
Or then give him the chocolate bar. Like, he doesn't even give him the bar.
Yeah.
So it's like, you didn't select this kid. You were a dick to him. And there was literally no point. Also, they set up some plot points, or like, they kept reiterating things that did not make sense. Uh-huh. Like, oh, we sold out of the chocolate from this candy bar selling thing that we're doing this contest. So we're closing the store?
Yeah.
Why are we closing the store?
Right. He was like, well, we're packing up and leaving.
Yeah, we're something. Out of chocolate, so goodbye.
Yeah.
We're closing the store. Also, they kept, I don't remember them mentioning this in the film, but they kept mentioning that Grandpa Joe had been in that bed for 40 years.
Uh-huh.
Then how old is Willy Wonka? Because Grandpa used to work for him and
yeah.
talked about knowing him regularly.
Is that a change?
I don't recall him ever, I don't recall in the first movie him ever mentioning how long he'd been in that bed.
I think some of those may be from the book.
Maybe. But then in that case, is Willy Wonka immortal? And if so, then why is he finding a predecessor?
I guess. But those, I mean,
I know. It's like, just, but it's like they kept hammering those points and they made a big deal of them. So the glaring problems with them made more, they were more obvious.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. The book made the problems of the source material more obvious.
I think that if the... To me, it probably has more to do with the fact that the show itself is not entertaining. I don't think those things matter that, like, you shouldn't be thinking about those things. The show should be entertaining enough that you're not thinking about it.
Right.
And I think it's pretty not a success in that sense. Because you kind of just sit there bored and you're just thinking about all these other things.
Mm-hmm. You're picking about.
Which apart. I don't think are the reason why it's boring. But, I mean, the first act of this show is just really... stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all that happens is Charlie kind of whines about how poor he is and how he doesn't have a ticket. Then we find out a kid got a ticket, and then it's back to Charlie being like, oh, I didn't get that ticket. And then mm-hmm. another kid gets a ticket. Like, the line of events in the first act is very it's very, like, it doesn't feel like one scene is making the next scene necessary.
Right.
It's just sort of like information over and over.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're like an interesting narrative for the most part is like the main character wants something and then they go after it in some way.
Right. He's very passive.
And then maybe that doesn't succeed and you have to change tactics or there's an obstacle or someone's trying to block you. Now this might all be true of the movie too, but the movie gets it over with in like
20 minutes.
Yeah. And then you're at the factory and then you have all the spectacle of being at the factory. This, like, I don't think that part of the story is worth spreading out to, you know, 60 minutes.
Agreed. But I mean, let's not discount the mother's dream ballet.
Yes. So the mother has a song, which I think replaced Cheer Up Charlie.
Yeah. Where she's stirring the
And it's called
laundry.
If Your Dad Was Here or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't think about this, but somebody actually mentioned to me that they thought it was offensive that the mother's song was replaced. I don't know Cheer Up Charlie that well. I don't know the movie super well, but that, that song was replaced with a song that's like,
if only you had a man.
I'm worthless without your, if your dad was here, everything would be okay.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that, but that's true.
Yeah, that's not untrue.
Yeah. In the movie, she's literally stirring laundry in a pot with an oar while she's singing this song about telling him to cheer up.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, so there's this song about her basically saying like, hey, if there was a man here, your life would be fine. And then, you know, ghost dad appears.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of doing like a sweet little like caressing dance or like a little waltz or something, it's a full out like Swan Lake moment. And mm-hmm. it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was holding myself laughing at how silly it was.
Yeah. And even when the guy left, he did like an arm thing as he left.
Yeah.
I found the lyric. It's this. And if wishes were horses, we could gallop away. Because it's like, we make a lot of wishes. It'd be nice if we had, like, horses are a thing rich people have.
Mm-hmm.
We could ride away on them. And if cabbages were watches, I would know the time all day. So I guess that means there's constantly cabbages around?
Well, they said that, they do say that they're like, oh, cabbage again.
Yeah.
But just when you're starving, it's, cabbage is great.
To me, I'm like, that's like a first draft of that lyric that never got revisited.
Like, no one did a second pass on that one.
Yeah. I think the second act is better.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed, there's a big squirrel dance. I enjoyed that.
Right. Or again, that was another problem I had with it, though. Like, they set up that the squirrel is normal squirrel size.
Mm-hmm.
Because she chases it off stage, and then suddenly they're giants.
Yeah, that was weird.
Like, what happened?
So it was fine. I think the cast is fine.
I will say something that I was worried about going in, that Charlie was not annoying kid actor tropes.
He was not.
No.
Yeah, he was fine. Yeah.
I thought he did a nice job. He wasn't screechy. He wasn't cloying. He wasn't annoying.
Yeah, I thought Noah Weisberg as Willy Wonka was good.
If not a bit low energy, I thought.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Actually, the Candyman was a surprisingly low energy number. I will fault him for doing a couple of really dumb jokes that feel like bits that, well, I don't care who thought of these bits. If the producers make him do a bit where he goes, "It tastes of bananas," B-A-N-A-N-A-S, if they're making him do that, then they suck. And if he really wants to do that joke and he put it in, then I don't agree with that.
Then he needs to commit to it more because it wasn't working because he was half-assing it.
Yeah, so I don't, this is going everywhere. Like, it's going to a bunch more cities. In my opinion, this is definitely one you should skip. Like, I have not really said that about any of the shows that we've seen before.
You've always said, like, well, at least go, you know, check it out, form your own opinion.
Yeah, no, don't. Don't form your own opinion. Don't go see this. I mean, I just think that, like, now, the podcast I listened to where they liked this show, they brought their kids to it, and the kids loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm wrong and kids would love this. Also, I think kids in the like fit the like impermanence of memory will probably just remember like the fun things about it.
Sure. And
forget that the whole first act is just like so dreary.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that when we got walked in, there was a projection on the front curtain. Mm-hmm. Or scrim or whatever, and I was like, this has me worried, because what you're hoping to see is spectacle with this show.
That's kind of the only reason to do this show.
Like, yeah. And I am just on record as saying that I think projections are not good for set design. I think that it's a bad trend in theater. I don't find them to be very theatrical. Mm-mm. I think it's impressive. Like, it was technologically impressive because I was like, this is a nice LED screen they have.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. But like, I think that they are sort of anti-theatrical almost.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't ever suggest anything except that they are TV screens showing you pictures of a set.
Right, which the back to the point you made about the character Mike TV, his whole number is an indictment of watching television too much. Meanwhile, we're watching television in the theater.
And his number
is
entirely happens on the television.
Yeah,
without the actor.
He doesn't actually get to be in his own number.
Yeah.
Because we're watching it on television.
I wonder if he's backstage just singing during that.
Maybe.
Also, the title and lyrics of that song are one of the worst things.
I don't even remember what it was.
They're vidiots.
Oh, God.
They're vidiots. It was like, it reminded me of Nothing Ever Happens on Mars from Waiting for Guffman. Right. It was just ill-advised all around.
Yeah. What did you think of the Oompa Loompas?
The Oompa Loompas were actually very cool when they first showed up.
Uh-huh. But then
they just sort of wore out there. I mean, they just show up so much. Also, I do think it's like, I think it's problematic still to use, I just am curious what little people think of these kind of tropes.
Right.
Because actually, I think it got worse in this, because they were like, they're from this tribe, and now we're going to go, you know, hear about how I discovered them with this kind of vaguely, you know, Caribbean.
White savior.
But like, it's sort of like a mapping of like, he went into Africa and got like, you know, yeah, like saved this primitive tribe from their lives or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just, I don't think that is backstory. I don't think we needed to see
right
on stage.
Sure.
So I guess just contrast the way they approach the theater making of this show versus like whether or not you like Harry Potter, the theatricality in Cursed Child is very high.
Right.
And they
use a lot of projections as well, but they use it in a theatrical way to enhance what's going on stage rather than replace what's going on stage.
Yeah, they actually did something with the projection in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory that was very similar. They attempted to do something very similar to one of the coolest effects in Harry Potter. I'm not saying that they tried to copy it. I'm saying that they did a similar thing, which involves like a practical piece, lighting, and projection. And it was just like, whatever, in this one. And whereas in Harry Potter, it's like one of the coolest things you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Ever.
So, yeah. Other shows that I have disliked, like, I didn't love Bright Star. I didn't love Something Rotten.
Right.
You know, I still think it's like, you could still go see him and it's fine. But I just think the first act of this is so boring that like, and not of interest in any way. Like, it's not like illustrative of, or thematic with the movie or anything. Mm-hmm. It's not particularly like so horrendous that it's enjoyable. It's just kind of like there.
So basically,
maybe second act it.
I was just going to say, so basically what you're saying is, if you already have tickets for this, go to dinner before the show. Don't worry about ordering dessert. Have another cocktail.
Yeah.
Get there by act two. You'll enjoy it.
If you have tickets to a show and you don't show for act one, do they like cancel your tickets?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they can. It depends.
They probably don't go to the trouble.
Yeah. I mean, for a show that's not sold, like if it was Hamilton, yeah.
They're reselling
your tickets. Right. But for this, I mean, they're not going to do that because it's not going to sell out.
It's on tour through June.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, actually second acting, it's not a bad idea, because to the extent that there's some like interesting staging and songs or whatever.
That Wonka Vader.
Yeah. it's in the second act. I did like the song It Must Be Believed to Be Seen.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of that song.
Mm-hmm.
I like that the title of that song is a strike that reverse it reversal of a common phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was an interesting idea for a song. And so that song itself is kind of interesting. That's at the end of act one, unfortunately. So right. You can't second act it.
Yeah.
Then there is in this act two, there is a pretty extended examination of that idea that you have to use your imagination to get through a challenge that also, I think on paper, it'd be like, this is a cool idea. And then is a little, that runs a little long.
Tedious is the word. Yeah. Tedious.
I don't think we've ever, I don't, for some reason, I don't feel anything about coming out against the show. I just like, I don't know why I don't feel like I need to protect anyone. I guess because Charlie and Chocolate was, it's massive phenomenon.
Right.
Everybody's wealthy involved with this.
Well, I mean, the show kind of didn't do well on Broadway.
Yeah. But Mark Shaman's doing
fine. Sure. Yeah.
You know, no one is like, this isn't like some, you know,
first time composer.
What's that like? Fiasco Theater or something. Like, if Fiasco Theater did something that we really, really, really hated, I'd still be like, first of all, Fiasco Theater would still do something creative.
Sure.
With it. And then you might not agree with their creativity or whatever, but I probably wouldn't be so inclined to just be like, don't go see this. But like, they have, the people involved in this have plenty of money. They don't need your, you know, I guess if you get a comp, I mean, it's, I feel like even if you have a comp, I'm not sure you should go.
Wow. You really didn't like it.
I was just so bored and very conscious of how much more time we had to spend in the theater.
I wonder, I'm just thinking this now, I wonder if this show would be kind of like a Big Fish for me. When I saw Big Fish on Broadway, I hated it.
Uh-huh.
I absolutely hated it. And then I saw a much smaller production of it actually in Orlando that was beautiful. And I was crying and I loved it. And I was like, suddenly I like this show.
Yeah.
I wonder if going to a big touring production house of a national equity touring show, you have these expectations in mind, and then like, I wonder if seeing this show on a smaller regional scale later on, I might appreciate it more. But also, like, the book is still problematic and the songs are still not great.
I think because some of the imagining of especially the first act songs could probably be more intimate and more engaging in a certain way. Mm-hmm. I think if you put a certain amount of like reinterpretation into like how, I don't know. It's one problem. It might be better in an intimate setting because one problem with the first act is it's very sparse.
Yeah.
And like, it feels kind of like if you're in a cavernous place like the Pantages, the first act is just like, is literally either Charlie at the house with the grandparents or he's at the candy store.
With one guy.
That's it for the whole first act. And then there's like news updates about the kids and they have their numbers and stuff like that. But it's not like a sweeping thing. So maybe if it was all boiled down to a very, very small focus, it mm-hmm. might be good. But and then also, it's like, why? Like, you could go through a lot of effort to make this a more engaging show, but like,
or you could just do A Christmas Story, the musical, or something, or Matilda.
You could just do Matilda or do any other show. Like,
right. Like, but I'm saying, if you're looking for something of this ilk,
yeah,
like do Matilda.
Yeah.
You'll be much happier. It's a much better show.
Yeah. Now this show might be easier for regional places to do
mm-hmm.
because you only need one kid.
Yeah. That was another thing. Like the kids being played by adults, I thought I was going to have a bigger problem with.
It was fine.
But some of them were too big, like too tall, I thought.
You mean physically
like,
too big.
Yeah. Like they just look. Oh, and I also really, really hated the treatment of Augustus.
Yeah, that was bad.
He was just a walking fat joke and not like unnecessarily mean.
There was just nothing nuanced or interesting about that at all. It was like a fat character from like the 70s or like even before we had John Candy. Like the way they would treat a fat character in the old days, mm-hmm. just a
punching bag.
I know that he's a symbol of gluttony, but it's still not interesting. Like it still should be interesting, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that was just unfortunate. I didn't mind the adults playing the kids because then they have to kill them off pretty, you know. So I don't know. It might be interesting to see a young Vercassol just torn apart.
Right. I did think it interesting because they made such a big deal about Veruca's kind of demise and Augustus and Mike TV's. But then when you get to Violet, she kind of inflated a little bit and then ran off stage. And I was like, is that it?
Because well,
there was a huge number in London where she like turned into a disco ball and they like did this whole Oompa Loompa number called Juicy, I think, where.
Yes.
And that was, I'm like, so I knew they had cut it, but I was like, that's it. Like, they're not going to do anything else.
So I think that this current show also, I mentioned to you, probably has the vestigial tales of lots of previous versions.
Yeah.
Because she's wearing Juicy Couture sweatpants.
Right.
The whole show. So it makes sense if she had a song called Juicy at the end. Mm-hmm. And also it's like bubblegum and all that stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, when she first started inflating, she literally got maybe 10% bigger.
If that.
Then she left stage, came back on with more, and then they like pushed a yoga ball across the stage as if that was her. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
There was no number really. There was nothing. It was just kind of, well, then she's done.
Yeah, I don't think that they... I mean, this show has already been heavily revised, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically done. But, like, they put so much into each of them having their own distinct numbers in the first act, and then kind of just get rid of them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, if we were going to set it up so much, then give us a payoff.
Yeah.
There wasn't one.
I would just say, like, they need to get to the Chocolate Factory halfway through the first act,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know... Maybe I will say another egregious thing, and maybe because it's not in the book. I mean, yeah, it's probably not in the book, but they don't do the boat ride at all.
Yeah.
Which I think is like a huge oversight. Maybe they're like, this is too associated with a movie, or this is a thing they added for the movie that isn't consistent with what Roald Dahl wants or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because how does Veruca Salt die in the movie?
She goes down to, it's geese rather than squirrels.
Okay.
And there's like an egg machine thing where the egg falls onto a thing and it decides if it's a good or a bad egg.
Right.
And if it's a bad egg, it goes down a chute. So she wants one of the geese. So she runs up on top of it, stands on it.
She wants her dad to bring a goose home for her. Okay.
And so she throws her whole, she has a whole big number called I Want It Now, where she ends up standing on one of the egg
and she's a bad detectors egg.
And she's a bad egg.
Is that where the phrase bad egg comes from?
I don't think so, because he says it like, oh, she was a bad egg.
Well, because actually, I think that makes way more sense that she'd want a goose. Is it a goose laying golden eggs?
Chocolate golden.
Right. It makes way more sense that she'd want that for her house than a squirrel.
That sorts nuts.
Right.
Right.
But she really wants that squirrel in this.
Yeah. And also, like, we you know, they each have their own kind of thing. You know, so Augustus is a glutton. Violet has the gum. So we know that Veruca's thing is that, like, okay, she's greedy. She wants...
Yeah.
But why did we make her a Russian ballet dancer on top of it? Like, there was such an unnecessary layers of things.
I liked her ballet dancing.
She was a lovely little dancer, but it's also...
And I liked her partner dancing with the dad.
Yeah, but why?
I don't know, but I was just like, at least I have something to look at.
But why is she in the Chocolate Factory in point shoes? Like, it was just like, what's... happening.
Yeah, it's her thing.
Right, but it's an unnecessary thing.
Did you think that she was a good, like, were you like, that is a person who knows how to do ballet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she clearly had training.
And the Mike TV, first of all, the Mike TV part is pretty physically demanding. Like, he had to do a lot of, like, mimey, like, rolling over his back kind of thing. But that that's a weird part too, because he likes TV and video games, and he's physically restrained by his mother.
Right. Who's a 50s housewife.
So she's a modern classic time. Like mother's little helper mother who drinks and takes drugs to get through the day.
Right.
She's from the 50s, but she also takes very modern drugs. She had a whole song about all the drugs she takes.
Right. But then she at one point says it's not the 1950s. Like she was unaware of it.
No. Is that what she said? Yeah. Well, he said, why are you dressed for the 1950s?
And she said, it's not the 1950s.
Oh, I wonder if that's supposed to be a joke about, like, the show has no period.
Maybe.
But then if you mention name brands of, like, antidepressants.
Then it has a period.
Then it's somewhat locked in time.
Right, and he's playing video games.
Right, plus also the, what's the bubblegum girl name?
Violet.
She says Instagram at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, she and her father are super, like, about trending and being influencers. Yeah.
Oh, right. Sound generally was okay. That dad's mic was weird.
Mm-hmm.
They missed a couple of bring the mic up. And we were sitting right next to sound booth. So
yeah, there was one point where we're both kind of like, oop.
Well, we kind of want to like look over the wall and be like, what y'all doing in there? I probably should have done this. At intermission, I could see into the booths like, console area, and they had like a little lighting cue system where they had a diagram of the projector, the LED screens up on their screen.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, I'd probably be more interested just to watch that. Like, I bet I would be more interested to watch them run the show.
Yeah. Than actually watching the show.
Oh, for sure. And then there's a really boring scene right near the end. So in the movie, when there's just a scene between Charlie, Grandpa Joe, and Willie,
mm-hmm.
where he's basically like, you cheated us or whatever. And then Charlie says something, and then he's like, that's all I needed to hear. You're the winner. I feel like in the movie, that scene takes 3 minutes.
Well, that movie takes 3 minutes because they've set up in the movie the whole thing about trying to get the Gobstopper out because of Slugworth, which is not a character in the show.
Uh-huh.
The Gobstoppers are barely ever mentioned in the show. And they never broke the rules throughout the thing because they didn't take the drink that makes them fly.
In the movie?
In the movie, they do that. So in that scene, right. They're able to confront the fact that you stole that drink and that therefore you get nothing. And then even though Charlie isn't getting anything and feels cheated, he gives back the Gobstopper anyway, showing that he's still a good guy.
In the play, the rule he breaks is that he's not supposed to look in this journal.
Which he immediately does.
Yeah. By the way, previously, he also stole a dollar from the candy store. just because he saw a dollar basically near the cash register of a retail business.
That just closed down.
But you're like, where the owner left you in the store by yourself.
Right.
Because
they sold all the chocolate, so they're closing.
So he broke the rule by looking in the book, and I think that's the rule why he's like, you're not going to... And they're also disappointed because they're just getting the Gobstopper instead of the factory or something. Because he says, like, you'll get everlasting candy.
Mm.
Candy for life, and then he gives him the
Gobstopper, right.
But in the play, then there's a long argument between Grandpa Joe and Willy Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
And then is that they both leave? Leaving Charlie alone.
Right.
And then Charlie, in this book he's not supposed to be looking at, then starts writing in this book he's not supposed to look at, right? Like,
yeah,
he's
starts like, vandalizing.
Oh, because he's like, I keep these journals blank for ideas I haven't had yet.
Right.
And then Charlie just starts writing in the book himself.
Right.
And then they had a projection where they like showed some of his ideas, and one of those is the fizzy lifting.
Yeah,
right.
I think so.
I remember it was referenced there, but
at that moment, all I could think of was like, "Oh, Charlie is in Curious Incident now."
Yeah, I mean that's for sure. Like, I don't think that the theatricality of this has anywhere near the magic of Matilda.
No.
So that's kind of a problem if the show's about imagination and wonder, you know?
Especially when it's the broader known property.
Yeah.
Like, you've got two pieces of work by the same author. One is universally beloved and known and has had two films. The other had a moderately decent film in the 90s that no one really remembers or very few people remember. So you're going to want to do right by the one that's really beloved, and they didn't. Whereas Matilda is a wonderful musical, I think.
Yeah. I think I wonder how much pressure it gets taken off you when there's already been a movie that everyone hates.
Right.
You know, right? So it's like, well, it's not going to be as bad as that.
Right. At least we won't have Johnny Depp doing his weird impersonation of
Yeah.
Claire Danes.
I haven't seen that. It's probably accurate. So this is a do not recommend from Chris Grace.
And it's a, if you got tickets, you might as well, from Eric Michaud.
Yeah. I guess if you have tickets, you might as well.
Yeah. Oh, I had one other interesting, this is not Charlie related, but it is LA related. And kind of theater related, but a little bit more Disney. They've announced that they're going to be doing an interactive kind of audience participation version of The Little Mermaid at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh.
It's kind of like a sing-along more than anything. But the cast has been announced, and it's a pretty interesting cast. Lea Michele is playing Ariel. Harvey Fierstein will be Ursula.
Okay.
Cheech Marin as Chef Louis, because he is very French. Ken Page as Sebastian, Peter Gallagher as King Triton, and Leo Gallo as Prince Eric.
Who's Leo Gallo?
I don't know. But he's the only one I didn't know, but he was included, so I mentioned
him. The one you said before, Peter Gallagher?
Peter Gallagher, Ken Page.
Who's Ken Page?
He was in Amos Behaven, and he's a...
Was he a Audrey?
He might have been. Not in the revival, but he might have been.
I don't know why. I feel like he might have been an Audrey, too.
I'm sure he probably was off Broadway, maybe, in the first run.
And he said he was a Deuteronomy.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I still don't love, like... I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see Harvey Fierstein do Ursula, but, like, in this day and age, I still just feel like, why are we taking... women's role, like one of the killer women's roles,
especially a role that can go to a bigger woman.
Yeah,
a bigger woman who can just sing her face off.
Yeah, I feel like the Rebel Wilson one was not that long ago.
No, it wasn't. So I don't know what's different about this one, but I,
well, you know, maybe Hollywood Bowl has just this thing now where they're like, hey, every couple of years we can just throw a cast together, sell a bunch of tickets, and like it's probably going to be a concert version ish, right?
It is, but they're also showing the movie.
I see.
While it's happening. So I think they're going to show the movie, and then I don't know if they're right. going to sing over maybe, the
No, vocals? I bet they'll sing a song with the band and play some like clips.
Oh, maybe.
Video clips that go with it. But like for Hollywood Bowl, it's probably not that complicated to do it.
Right.
Booking the show is probably the hardest part.
Sure.
And probably everybody doesn't even need to be that coordinated in terms of rehearsing.
Because especially with that, because it's so little of it, like Sebastian's kind of his own thing, you know, like you need him for the group numbers, but he doesn't really interact with Triton all that much except for like one scene. You know, you can like
if you're doing Ursula, you can just learn your one song pretty much.
Yeah. Especially if they're doing the film version, because Ursula has a couple songs in the musical, but they're doing the film. So,
I mean, I wouldn't mind, you know, they probably already tried to get Melissa McCarthy to come do Poor Unfortunate Souls.
Oh,
you
should know. Be great. Should be fun.
And I think Harvey Fierstein will be fine. It's just that I still bristle a little bit when it's just like, well, that could have been, you know.
Sharon McKnight.
Who's that?
She was Diva in Starmites, the clips that I showed you.
Oh, I don't remember those.
Oh, well, I mean, how could you forget?
But as we know, what is her name? What's Catherine O'Hara's name on Schitt's Creek?
Oh, God.
Oh, no, she wasn't in Starmites. She was in Starlight Express.
Yes.
That character. She was talking about her theater background.
Right.
Hi.
Yeah. So that's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
That's Hollywood Bowl. That's shows that have opened and closed.
That's Showbiz Kid.
So next week we're going to see Falsettos
at
the Amundsen. And the Tuesday after that we're seeing Fiddler on the Roof. I guess back at the Pantages.
Yeah. I should mention before we go further, I don't like Falsettos. I've never seen it. I hate the score. I hate the characters.
And it's in my top five musicals.
Yeah. All the time. So I'm hoping this production will change my mind.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking it might change yours. but I know it makes me a bad gay. It makes me a bad musical theater person, but I have never, ever liked Falsettos.
I mean, I got the cassette of Falsetto Land before it was integrated into one show. Falsetto Land cassette I wore out listening to at a time when I was still coming to terms with myself as a gay person. And then early on when I was in New York, they had put the three together into Falsettos. And I saw Michael Rupert in it.
And Chip Zion?
I saw the whole.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I don't think that was Faith Prince. I think it was...
At that point it was Alison Frazier?
Maybe, yeah. Faith Prince played the wife.
Trina, I think so.
Yeah, so I don't think I saw her. I saw her in Guys and Dolls at some point, uh-huh. And I think I remember being like, I think this was the one I saw with brown hair curly. I think is what I saw. That's her name, brown hair curly. So yeah, I'm excited to see what you think of it.
Me too. I'm interested to see.
It's funny when you see clips of it, like, and I think you feel like this about certain Sondheim shows, where you see clips and like things have just been changed, and you're like, why, like. I liked it the way it was before.
Right.
So, because even in the clips for when it was up for the Tonys, I remember there were things changed in, like, the baseball song. And I was like, that doesn't even, like, and I know the creators are probably like, this is better.
And it's right.
Like, no, it's not.
Well, it's like that revival of Into the Woods in 2001.
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing this? Steven, why are you doing this?
I wonder if perfect.
Don't
if
change it.
I wonder if it's that just as a creator, you're like, you know, if I had more time, I was going to fix this thing. Now I get more time, so let me go ahead and fix it.
Right. And I think some of the ideas were like, oh, well, originally we did have two princes doing both wolves and the pigs. So let's bring them back. Well, some things.
Is that a thing?
In the revival, there were two wolves.
Uh-huh.
One was after Little Red Riding Hood and one was after the Three Little Pigs. Oh. And they sang Hello, Little Girl as a duet. Which
one to the pigs?
Like, he's singing Hello, Little Girl, but he's chasing pigs. It was, it was dumb. Or adding Jack and Cinder and Little Red into the end of at the steps of the palace. Why?
We should also mention that, I don't think we talked about this, but it's, I think, worth it to go onto YouTube and look up the woman in Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
Doing her song. Was it on Colbert?
It was on...
Seth Meyers, maybe?
I think it was The Tonight Show.
Because there right now is a, like, I guess they're calling it, like, a deconstructed Oklahoma.
Yeah, on Broadway.
Some people love it, and most of the reactions I've seen love it.
I will say, like, open-minded people seem to love it.
Yeah.
And people who are like, that's not how Broadway is.
Right.
Are, like, up in arms about everything about it.
Right.
Everything I've seen about it looks crazy and amazing to me. Like, everything about it looks
cremazing.
Yeah. Like, I posted a montage clip of it and I was like, this looks so different and cool. And like, my mom immediately posted, yep, glad I didn't get tickets for that piece of shit. So like, cause she immediately was turned off by the fact that it's not what she's used to in Oklahoma. And Oklahoma is a very special show to a lot of people. Mm. Like it's the first show I ever saw, or it's the first show I ever did, or I dance with my husband now and that, and, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I think it's a very special show to people. And so when you see something that you love so much done in a way that's like, oh, I didn't think about that when I knew this show before, and now there's a layer of things that I didn't know was there and I know is there now, and I don't like it.
I mean, that's probably what happens when you're doing old shows.
Yeah.
Because like Carousel had to go through the same thing. My Fair Lady had to go through the same thing. Like,
it's like the line in Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Hottentots.
I mean, some of these ideas don't sit right in 2019.
Right.
So I'd like to see it. I've never seen it. Never seen the show.
You've never seen Oklahoma?
Nope.
Well, my goodness.
So that's it for this week.
Yeah.
Next week, we are going to talk about Fosse Verdon next week.
We are.
So you have a week to watch the first two episodes.
One thing I should mention, because, you know, I am officially back now from Australia.
Uh-huh.
Hooray. But I've just signed a contract
to go away
again. To go back. So I'm going to be gone for the entire month of June. Chris will be directing me once again in Thrones, the musical parody, this time for the entire month of June.
At a very small little black box theater called
the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll be playing June 3rd through the 30th
in Sydney. Get your credit cards out, fly to Australia. Thrones will also be in the Edinburgh's Fringe Festival.
Which I'll also be in.
That'll be in August. Mm-hmm. And then also the show that I'm producing, Voldemort in the Teenage Hogwarts Musical Parody, will be in Edinburgh again.
Which I'm also 5
p.m.
in.
Yeah, you're in that. And then that show will be touring London and some other shows after August.
Yeah.
And I think that's all the theater gigs we have planned out right now for the rest of this year.
Right. But you're looking at, as of right now, you're coming to Australia with us. So we'll be able to record weekly from there for the entire month that we're there and still upload on time. Otherwise, we'll have to go back to what we did in Australia the last time, where I send reports.
I can also get guest hosts here in LA.
No, no one can replace, no one can replace me. What are you talking about?
All right, so we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.